Here's some other interesting things about the microbiome to keep in mind, that there are over 2,000 species of identified bacteria that can be present in your microbiome. And when I say your microbiome, keep in mind we're talking about all of the microbes in your system, not just the gut, right? The gut has the largest portion, but there are microbes everywhere. Your skin has about 1.5 trillion microbes. Your mouth has about 22% of all the microbes in your body. Your gut has a little over 30 something percent. So we're talking about all of the microbes throughout your biome. The average person has somewhere between 300 and 700 species. I'll elaborate on why that is a scary number to be, right now. Right at the end of this slide, I'll talk about that. If you look at the microbiome and some of its functionality, right, it produces, for example, 90% of the body's serotonin is produced by the microbiome. And that's produced largely in the gut by cells called enterochromaffin cells, right? These EC cells are part of your hormonal cells in the lining of your gut. And they produce all kinds of hormones, including serotonin, which is a very important neurotransmitter. Hormone type of regulatory compound. Now, I want to elaborate on this a little bit, right? This is where we're going to go a little bit off the slides and elaborate on it because I want to illustrate how important just this one functionality is, right? So keep in mind, throughout your intestinal lining, you have these cells called enterochromaffin cells. These are part of your neuroendocrine system. So your neuroendocrine system are hormonal cells that are within the neurological system of your body. They're lining the intestinal cell, the intestinal lining. They line within the intestinal lining itself. So every 12 cells or so, you've got this neuroendocrine cell, which is called an enterochromaffin cell. That cell produces 90% of your serotonin. You've got a number of them in your digestive tract. The way that that cell produces serotonin requires the activation by microbes in a couple different formats. Number one, stimulation of that cell, a nudging, if you will, of that cell to say, hey, produce serotonin. That is one of the ways in which the microbes stimulate those cells to produce serotonin. The second way is by allowing the metabolization of tryptophan by pushing tryptophan metabolism down a particular pathway that converts tryptophan into serotonin and then melatonin eventually as well. Your microbes play an important role in nudging the differentiation of the metabolization of tryptophan into serotonin. So the microbes play a dual role in causing those cells to produce serotonin. Now, what is serotonin being produced in the gut for? What is it being used for? Right? So here are some of the things it's being used for where it's absolutely critical. Number one, regulation of gut motility, right? The movement of your bowel is dependent on the presence of serotonin, and serotonin is an effectuator of that peristaltic activity of your bowel. If your bowels are stagnant, you are slow, you're not regularly going to the bathroom once or twice a day, and you don't have well-formed stools, there's likely an issue with serotonin production in the bowel, right? What else does it do? It activates sensory and motor reflexes, which is really important for your gut to play a role in triggering motor reflexes throughout your body, right? Your gut can sense contents that are coming through and then creates motor reflexes so that the rest of your body can respond to the presence of that contents. In particular, things like eating, right? So as your stomach expands, for example, you've got neurological tissue that is supposed to sense the expansion of the stomach and then send signals to the brain through the autonomic nervous system to tell the brain, hey, release the satiety hormone so that we don't overeat, right? Because our stomach's about to blow because we're eating so much. So just that's another simple explanation of how some of these motor reflexes are critically important to dictate our behavior. Now, when we overeat and we go beyond that distension, beyond that feeling of fullness, we end up with a food bolus that can actually drive more inflammation in the body. The studies are clear that high caloric dense meals, meaning we're overeating beyond the amount of calories we need for that particular meal, leads to an increased risk of endotoxemia, meaning leaky gut, right? And it leads to issues like leptin resistance. It also leads to issues like hyperinsulinemia. which is or hyperlipidemia. So after the meal, having too much blood lipids, having too much blood sugar, leading to leaky gut, leading to systemic inflammation. All of these things can occur just because the motor neurons in the GI tract aren't responding properly to the expansion of the stomach and the intestines from eating too much volume. Serotonin is required for that. Right? Fluid secretion and absorption, right? So your bowel is supposed to regulate how much fluid you take in and how much fluid you put out. Now, if you're chronically constipated, it could mean that your bowels are slow because of the lack of serotonin production, but it also could mean that because of the lack of serotonin production, your bowels aren't secreting or retaining enough fluid, so your stools are too hard, which makes it harder and harder to push them through, which then leads to more constipation, that feeling of fullness, and then eventually a lot of struggling when the stool does make its way to the end to get it out, right? And that struggling can lead to things like hemorrhoids and other lesions. It can lead to tears, micro tears in the large bowel, which then increase susceptibility to inflammation, damage, IBD, and so on, right? So again, all of that can stem from not having enough serotonin being produced in the gut. What else does it do? Well, it regulates gut inflammation. So the gut is highly susceptible to inflammation because there's tons and tons of compounds entering the gut on a daily basis, and your immune system has to try to figure out what to do with it. Serotonin plays a very important anti-inflammatory role in the bowel, both in the small bowel and the large bowel. So it regulates inflammation. If you're not making enough serotonin through the enterochromaffin cells as a result of having a dysbiotic microbiome, then you're much more susceptible to inflammation that may lead to things like IBD or Crohn's disease, right? It regulates nausea and vomiting. So those that eat and then often feel kind of very, very nauseous and uneasy and a little bit queasy in their GI tract after they eat a meal, that is likely, at least in part, a serotonin issue in the bowel, right? Metabolic function. So serotonin helps regulate various metabolic processes, including homeostasis, lipid metabolism, energy balance to dictate whether you're producing leptin or ghrelin, the hunger hormone or the satiety hormone, the activation of things like AMPK, which is a gene that you activate to get your cells to start burning fat, insulin response, all of these aspects of metabolism. Serotonin in the gut is playing a role in that. Modulation of platelet function and blood coagulation, right? This is so important because as you're eating food and things are scraping by in your GI tract, and you've got microbes that may be dysfunctional and trying to eat their way through the mucosal lining, you can get little micro tears and micro bleeds throughout your gut, and you want those to be repaired properly. And then throughout your body, you want your platelets to be functioning properly, and you want blood coagulation to be functioning properly. As it turns out, serotonin in the gut plays a role in that, right? Also, bone health, right? Osteoporosis. And the resorption of bone throughout your age. So at, most people will build bone up to the age of 30, right? And serotonin seems to play a role in the density regulation of the bone by activating osteoblastic cells. Osteoblastic cells are actually the cells that build bone, right? I know it's a misnomer because blast, you think of exploding things, but osteoblastic cells are the cell, the bone building cells that need to be activated and need to be, you know, stimulated in order to take calcium and build strong bones. Serotonin plays a role in activating the expression of osteoblastic cells. The cells that remove bone are called osteoclastic cells, right? So those are, that's a difference between the two. And serotonin can also slow down the resorption of bone by osteoclastic cells. So your bone health is dependent in part by the serotonin being produced in the gut. It also regulates the gut microbiota. What's pretty clear is that serotonin in the bowel plays a role in modulating the population of gut bacteria. There are some microbes that do well with an increased level of serotonin, and then other microbes that are inhibited by an increased level of serotonin in the gut, right? So I elaborated on all of these, and I promise you I'm not going to do that kind of elaboration with every single bullet point here. But the reason I elaborated on those 10 functions of serotonin in the bowel, and many of them you would never think have anything to do with serotonin in your bowel, like bone function, coagulation, energy metabolism, motility, hydration, the absorption and the secretion of fluid in the bowel. All of those things are dependent on serotonin in the bowel. And serotonin in the bowel can only be produced by the stimulation of enterochromaffin cells by certain types of bacteria in the gut microbiome, in particular in spore-based bacteria in the gut microbiome. And the precursor to serotonin is tryptophan. And a lot of tryptophan is actually produced by the microbes, as opposed to tryptophan that's coming in from the diet. So microbes actually break down amino acids and release more tryptophan, or they can synthesize tryptophan, which is a precursor to serotonin, right? Now, I elaborate on that, all of that. Again, I don't expect you to remember the details, but I want to emphasize the point that imagine one mechanism in your microbiome is off. All of those things I described can go off within your system, right? You may be sitting there with having chronic constipation, bowels are not moving, you're chronically dehydrated, you might bleed, you may be having issues with energy balance, your metabolism is off, you're gaining weight, your mood is of course off. So you've got all these things going on. All of that could be due to lower serotonin production in the gut because you're missing a few microbes that stimulate that serotonin production, right? That's how profound changes in the microbiome can be to your overall functionality. And that's the point I want to keep putting across. You need the microbes to function. And so it's not always the presence of some bad microbe causing a problem because you could be constipated, your bowel's not moving, food is not digesting well, you feel queasy every time you eat. You're in your mind, and in many practitioners' mind, they might go, oh my God, you might have a lot of bad bacteria. There might be pathogens in there that we need to now identify and kill. And then they'll go and do a gut test, and many gut tests using PCR unusually amplify the presence of pathogens, and they go, aha. It's because of these pathogens that you feel queasy and your bowels aren't moving and your system doesn't agree with food and you feel anxious, all of these things. So we got to kill these pathogens. All the while, that's actually going to do more harm because what you're really missing is diversity, missing functional microbes that aren't at high enough levels to stimulate the enterochromaffin cells. Right. Hopefully that point is coming across. And I think that's what I really want you to keep absorbing through this course because that's going to be the thing that allows you to really understand the role of the microbiome and then how to go about managing it, right, on your day-to-day basis. Now, the microbiome aids in digestion. 30 to 40% of the food you eat, the nutrient absorption from the food, the vitamin synthesis, the release of nutrients from the food, and of course, the bioconversion of nutrients that aren't already present in the food that have to be converted by the microbiome for us to utilize. Urolithins are a great example of that. Those are all dependent on the microbiome. The microbiome produces over 1,000 bioactive compounds, and the number goes into the tens of thousands if we start including all the proteins that the microbiome produces. The microbiome, of course, produces short-chain fatty acids like butyrate, propionate acetate, which we will talk about a little bit more as we go along, but they are such important regulators of everything in your body. There are dozens of chronic diseases that you can end up having, or others can, of course, end up having your friends and family just by a lack of butyrate production, right? Diabetes, for example, cardiovascular disease, inflammatory bowel conditions. So, IBD, so Crohn's, colitis, microcolitis, chronic diarrhea, chronic constipation, obesity, all of these things can show up as a result of not producing enough butyrate. That one functionality that we depend on the microbes for can lead to so many dysfunctions in the body that it shows up as numerous chronic conditions, right? And then they can pile on one another, right? If you have obesity, you can end up with type 2 diabetes. If you have type 2 diabetes, then you can end up with cardiovascular disease. If you have cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, you can end up with dementia. All of those stemming from just the inadequate production of butyrate. right? That's how important some of these functionalities can be. And we can't hack every one of these things. We have to start looking at the themes that we need to incorporate in order to make sure all of these things are functioning properly. And I promise you, we'll be addressing what those themes are. Now, of course, the microbiome also regulates and trains our immune system, right? I'll elaborate on that in the upcoming slides, but that's a very, very critical part of how our system functions. We require our immune system, and our immune system can often be a foe instead of the friend that it's supposed to be. And when it is a foe and when it's not doing the job it's supposed to do, i.e. defending us and or not attacking us, right? That's almost always the issue with the microbiome.